Digitization Group at Microsoft, and I wanted to walk through a couple of demonstrations here to show the power of the Microsoft Sync framework, some of the different ways that we can integrate synchronization into various different endpoints. I'm also going to introduce Neil a little bit later on, who's going to go into a little bit more detail of what the Sync framework is, some of the more detailed concepts of how we handle knowledge and change tracking, and all the internals of the Sync framework that we try to hide to you, hide from you in our APIs, but ultimately we'll go through some of those concepts as well. So in this demonstration, what I'm going to do is show how we can take various different endpoints, and in this case I'm going to synchronize from an Access database up to our new SQL Server Data Services. SQL Server Data Services being a storage in the cloud, which allows you to have easy access to information as long as you have an internet browser. And what we've done is we've used the Microsoft Sync framework to create some providers. We have providers that talk to each of the different endpoints. For example, we created one to talk to Access, take the changes from an Access database, migrate it up into a central or a consolidated data store. In this case, we're going to be using a SQL Server Data Services as the location. And then we're going to bring the information back down to a different store. And in that store, I'm going to bring it down to Outlook. So as you can imagine, you can have all kinds of different types of data users. Maybe some users are using Access, some using Excel spreadsheets, some users are using some other data source. It doesn't matter. If you can consolidate it, the synchronization framework gives you an easy place to move that information back and forth. So let me get started. What I'm going to do is open up Microsoft Access, and one of the things that you can do in Access is you can create a template database, and the template database that I'm going to use is a contact database. So let me just put one here, download it, and what Access will do is download for me a new template to use. It's just basically a contact store for me that has a specific format. And one of the things that we had previously done is we've created a Microsoft Sync framework application down here in the taskbar that will enable me to tie that synchronization endpoint up into the SQL Server Data Services. So once it's downloaded this template, give it a second to bring it down, I'm going to be able to start entering in some information into this data store and then synchronize it up. And then, while that's going, let me just quickly show you up here, SQL Server Data Services. This has a bit of a RESTful interface to it. So as you can see, I have a URL. It's going to SyncMix Demo. That's kind of my story, if you will. And then on the right-hand side, it's going to... let me close that down so you can see it. It's going to a container called Liam Contact Demo, right there. And so my container holds all of my information that might be appropriate for my company. But I could have all kinds of different entities in there. I could have, you know, it's almost like a table, different tables that are storing information. In my case, I'm consolidating that information. And you can see right now there's no information in there. But if I go back to Access and enter some information, say John Smith, put in an email address, telephone number, and save that change. So now in my Access database, I have stored that change, but if I still refresh this store here, I still don't have any data. That's because I have these islands of information, all these different users that are storing information, and they don't have any way of tying it together. So that's where the Sync framework comes in. And I'm going to right-click here in my application and initiate synchronization. What it does is it goes out to my Access database, says, is there anything that's changed in that database since the last time I synchronized? If so, it picks it up, brings it up, and synchronizes up to the to our SQL Server Data Services. And if I refresh the page, you can see that it has, in fact, synchronized the information into my container, and it has all the contact information. If I minimize this a little bit, you can see I've also stored some metadata. Metadata is what the Sync framework uses to track changes that have occurred to a data store. When it synchronizes the next time, it says, here's the metadata, it compares it to what it last looked like, says, here's the changes, brings them down, and starts synchronizing them. So let me bring in a new data store. Well, here's my Outlook database, and you can see that I've already synchronized it, brought that contact down, and that's come directly from MySQL Server Data Services. Well, I can start consolidating, tying these stores together. So let me add in a new contact here. Let's say Jim Brown. New email. test2@test.com. Give him a mobile number. 123-13-1111. And see if that changed. So, yes, what was your question? No, this one that we used was a custom provider. And as you asked, Sync Services for ADO.NET, I think that's what you were asking. Yeah, so Sync Services for ADO.NET has the ability to talk to any ADO.NET server-side database. On the client side, it's specifically for Compact and SQL Server Express. We do have a client provider that allows you to write your own providers, but this one we're using is a custom provider. Well, in our case, we're storing the metadata. In this particular sample, I'm storing the metadata in a separate store, in a separate store from Access. I mean, that's not to say that I couldn't store the metadata in Access. It's just sometimes when you're working with certain data stores, they only give you the ability to, you know, get changes or make changes. They don't give you the ability to modify the schema, which is why sometimes you want to actually have a metadata store outside of the data space. And that's why we did it with this sample here. Yeah, that's a good question about how do you actually detect when a change has occurred. And typically there's two different types of data stores that you can have. Sometimes if you're using like something like SQL Server, for example, they have built-in change tracking mechanism. In 2008, they built it right in. So you say to the database, what's changed since the last time I asked? And the database says, here you go. Other times, databases, you know, are, for lack of a better word, dumb. So they don't actually know what has changed. They can just say, here's my data. So in that case, what the Sync framework can do is what we call a full enumeration. So it basically, you know, we'll look through the data, compare what it last knew the state of it to be, and it says, okay, here's what's changed. And then from that, I can send off the changes to the other stores. So you have the two options. Obviously, if you have the ability to use a store's change tracking mechanism, it's more efficient, but you don't have to. So, yes, another question. That's okay. Yeah. So the question was whether we have basically a predefined metadata store. And the answer is yes. We do have, within the Sync framework, you can use a SQL Server Compact database as a metadata store, and that makes it very simple. You just call a few APIs, and we take care of storing the changes, creating the metadata store, doing all that for you. Now, in some people's cases, maybe you don't want to use that, or maybe you want to use a different store. So you can create your own custom store if you want to. It's a bit easier if you use the one that we predefined and pre-created for you. But the options are flexible either way. So let me just synchronize this change back up. And let me go back to the... we can see here now I have the two contacts consolidated into the SQL Server Data Services. And let me just go back into Access and make sure that change has come back down. And here we go. We can see that we've brought those changes back down as well. So what I've built here is somewhat of an offline scenario or an occasionally connected scenario where, you know, you have one consolidation point and then a bunch of different remote databases that hang off of that central one. Now, with the Sync framework, you can also extend it for collaboration. So I could then take my contact database and Access, walk up to another person, maybe through Bluetooth, and start sharing that information there as well. So it doesn't have to be the hub spoke scenarios. You can build any type of scenarios that you want with the Sync framework. And, you know, that's really the goal that we have with the Sync framework, to keep it open, And we're not tying you to one data store. We're not tying you to any particular devices. We want to make it open so you can create any providers for any data, basically anywhere. Yeah. Yes.
So is it possible to limit the data set that gets synchronized down to different clients? So like I might have like a million records in my sort of central data.
Great question.
I have only say 10,000 down to certain mobile devices. Is that something we can configure or control?
Yeah, that's a good question. And being able to limit the amount of information or basically filter the information down to the users is really a key thing in these occasionally connected environments, because if you were to take all of the data and bring it down to all of your users, not only is that going to be unrealistic because a lot of these remote devices can't handle all that data, but it also leads to another important problem, which is conflicts. If you have all the data, all the users potentially making changes to all the data, there's more of a chance that you're going to get a conflict when those changes come up and get consolidated. One user updates a fax number to one value, someone else does it to another value, they come up as a conflict, and you have to resolve that. Now, within the sync framework, we have it, and in a second I'll show you kind of how we can detect that and resolve it. But if you're able to filter it, like you can in the sync framework, it limits the need to have to do conflict detection or resolution in your application. So answer is yes, you can definitely filter it, and we highly recommend that you do so. So let me just finish this off, and I'm going to make a change to the phone number here. Save that. Close this database. And let me go back to Outlook, and I'm going to change this one to a different number. Save the change. And this time when I synchronize, the first data store will go up, synchronize it to the SQL Server data service, and it should come back up fine. But when it comes back down to my other store, it should create a conflict. It says, oh, wait, what you thought the data was is different than what it actually is, and we can bring that up. So let me just sync here. And here we have. It's detected a conflict between the two different stores. You see that it's actually detected it in the cloud database that we have, the SQL Server data services, and in Access. That's because Outlook synchronized up to the SQL Server, and it came back down, detected the conflict. So here I'm letting my users choose how to resolve it. But obviously within your application, you can do whatever means you want to resolve that, either if it's automatic or not. Yes?
Does the framework have built-in merge capabilities?
Does it have merge capabilities for conflict resolution?
Yeah,
it does. So there's a number of ones that are pre-built in. So it's kind of like a last-in-wins mode you can do. You can also do a merge. So for example, if it's John and Smith, you can actually merge it to say John Smith. Or maybe if it's an inventory, rather than choosing 3 units and 9 units, you actually sum them together. There's all kinds of different.
So usually you change the phone number and change the first person, merge with say the phone number is different.
Yeah, so that's getting into a little bit more of the custom conflict resolution, that basically we can give you the data, and as long as you know that's what you want to do, in your logic you can build it to handle it in that way. Yeah. So I'm going to pass it over to Neil now, who's going to talk a little bit more about some of the internals of the sync framework.
Yeah. I'm not sure, I'm hoping people can tell me what they want to know about this. But I'm not too much ready. In terms of slides going on.
Here, give it a second.
Oh. What's this do?
It's for the camera.
Oh, okay.
I'll plug this in here, too. Sorry.
What's that do?
It's for the... There you go.
It's for the what?
Video.
Oh, okay. It's an interesting microphone. How do I put this on? Does it go over this?
To the right.
That one? Like that?
Yep. This would be yours.
Oh, okay. I feel like a telephone operator. So, I can talk a bit about the provider model, or I can talk a bit more about our metadata. What are people?
The metadata, we already have a fairly significant infrastructure and applications that we built with mobile devices. Applications. So we have our own sort of slide format. How? What's the format that you use?
Sure.
Why don't I talk a bit about how the providers fit together, and then I'll... Yeah, I have some tech ads left. So I'll caution you, the code snippets on this, they line up with the CTP1 APIs. There's not big changes between CTP1 and CTP2, but a few of them, if you type them in, you get some... Won't compile till you make a few minor changes. But I still think they're probably good to show. Let me put these up here. So actually, let me go to slide one. So how do I make this project? To that. Okay, good. Why are you asking me questions? Okay. So I sort of showed this picture before. The big takeaway here is that this orchestrator and these two providers all run on one machine. So if a provider needs to talk to another machine, you have a couple options. You could either speak some proprietary protocol to the remote store, or if you want, you could build a proxy provider here that proxies the API of a provider running somewhere else. And if you want to proxy certain parts of it, like, for example, just applying changes, we have support that you can serialize that state and then construct the appropriate application or object for applying those changes on the other side. So there's a couple scenarios. This is sort of the pitch for there's some built-in providers. If we have one and you want to synchronize two endpoints, then you can just use what was called the sync agent, now the sync orchestrator. Connect those two together and you're good to go. If there isn't one, then you need to write a provider. So this is just showing what the code looks like to invoke a provider. Just making the pitch, it's pretty straightforward. You just new up the providers. This is in VB just for variation purposes. This is showing file sync between two folders. You just new up the file sync providers, tell it the folders, and kick the sync. So in general, in our model, we think of one provider in a particular sync session as source, and the other provider as destination. If you want bidirectional sync, it's simply a matter of doing it once in each direction. Of course, if you have conflict resolutions, in particular scenarios, you may need to do a third to propagate the resolutions. It depends on what your resolution policy is. If it's more intricate than one winning or the other winning, you may need another sync. So the source provider, all it does is enumerate changes. I'll show you a bit about that in a second. But it doesn't do any conflict detection or apply anything to its store. All it does is enumerate changes for the remote store based on the remote store's knowledge or watermark. So on the destination store, the destination is where conflict detection and resolution happen. So the first question, of course, is, are there any conflicts? I'll show you how we use our metadata to figure that out. And the second question is, if there is a conflict, how do you want to resolve it? You have two options. You can either configure the sync to use a fixed policy like local wins, remote wins, things like that. Or you can say, please call back to the provider and let it decide. Or there's actually support, too, to call back to the application and let it decide. So it depends on your scenario. So this common metadata model is sort of what we talk about. This lets us handle all these scenarios. The point takeaway from this slide is that the metadata is robust against things like loops. It'll work correctly under those scenarios. And that it's manipulated for you by the framework. Primarily, all you do with this metadata is save it between synchronization sessions and hand it back to the engine when it asks for it. So in this deck, I won't talk too much about how knowledge works internally. I have another deck I'll show you in a minute that goes into that. There's two big types of metadata sync version. That's just where and when a change happens. So the idea of the replica where that particular change happened, and a version. A version is just, the version is both, but the particular tick count is just a monotonic increasing number. You don't have to coordinate those. There's no synchronizing of clocks. Just increment the number on each endpoint. It could be wall clock if you want, or be whatever. The knowledge is effectively a watermark, but what it is a compact representation of the particular versions a given endpoint knows about. So, for example, let's say you know everything from endpoint A up to version 7, and from endpoint B up to version 19, then your knowledge would be A7, B19. And then for various interruption scenarios and filtering scenarios, we can also handle exceptions to the knowledge, both in terms of single items or in terms of ranges.
And so once you reach steady state, knowledge will always collapse to that single entry per endpoint. So things a provider writer has to do, they have to implement change tracking on their particular endpoint and generate new versions. We can help you out with that if you need. Figure out what changed since a given time. If you want, you can use our metadata store and it will keep track of the items that were known as of the previous sync. Apply changes. We have a component called the change applier, which you hand it your versions for items, if you have any, or if you don't know about the item, you just tell it you don't know about the item. And the data you got from the other side, and it will figure out whether there are conflicts and call you back to appropriately apply the changes. And then, of course, you need to store the metadata, those versions, and that knowledge I talked about. And you can either store that alongside your data, or if this metadata store component that's built on SQL Compact, and you can use that. So this is saying we have this metadata store. It can store versions and knowledge, and also additional metadata associated with items. And it's got an API that's very sync-centric, so rather than using a database to do this, you can, you know, make calls like get version, get all versions that aren't known to this knowledge corresponding to items in the local store, for example. So it maps very directly to the API provider writer needs to use, right? So this is just showing saving a version in the metadata store. So we find a particular item, increment our tick count, and then update the version on that item, and then save it back to the metadata store. So what happens in change enumeration? So on change enumeration, the destination provider will send its knowledge to the source provider. And then what the source provider will do is for every item in the source, it will do a contains check. It will say, for the item I have here with version X, is that version known to the remote store? If it isn't, it's a change the remote store hasn't seen yet, so we need to send that over. So that's literally all it does. It fills up a change batch. And they're set up, if you look at the API, you'll actually see that the destination and source can negotiate a batch size, and then we'll make multiple calls so you can batch the changes across. So this is showing what the code might look like for change enumeration. If you're using the metadata store, it's a lot easier because since you don't need to access the data yet, all you need is versions. The metadata store can do all the work for you if you use it. Sorry? So forgotten knowledge. So one of the other things that needs to be done on a store, right, since it needs to keep track of changes, is it needs to track tombstones. So we have this notion of forgotten knowledge. And forgotten knowledge keeps track of all the versions that you were associated with tombstones you've forgotten. So you can say, I've forgotten all tombstones up to my local tick count of 27, and the forgotten knowledge will keep track of that. And then forgotten knowledge is used by the engine to handle cases where, for example, somebody may have not synced with you for a very long time and they may not know about a delete. And if we can fall back to a full sync or ask you what you want to do, whether you just want to sync partial changes, to handle those scenarios. Otherwise, you run into a problem where you can never clean up tombstones, and they can potentially grow large if you have a large number of updates and deletes in your store. This is showing what the enumeration code would look like otherwise. You just need to new up one of these data structures called the change batch. Well, you construct it down later. It's really just a list. And you fill it up with the versions for everything that you, the other endpoint, didn't know about.
The change batch, like,
so the change batch would actually correspond to a list of versions associated with some items in a local store. So in the case of, say, you have your data stored in SQL, you would enumerate over that data using something like ADO.NET and then find the versions associated with those and then stuff them in the change batch. So, yeah, you could, for example, get the versions back in a data set and use batch to stuff your change batch.
So can you batch up, say you're updating a sample record with maybe five changes to different fields in that? Can you generate one sync for that?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about that in a second, because that's more on the application side, right? We're not manipulating the data yet, so. So I just want to make the point about conflict detection. With knowledge, it's very easy to detect conflicts, because since we have a representation of the versions both endpoints know about, if the source is sending a destination a change, the destination can look at its version on that particular item. If that version the destination has isn't known to the source. That means the source must have made a change to that item without knowing about a change that happened on the destination. Does that make sense? So we have a conflict. So that's how we use knowledge to detect a conflict. So the code for application is, like I said, a little bit more complicated, but not too hard. In application, the first method call that I haven't illustrated here is called process change batch. And that method, you're handed the source versions for the item. At that point, you can either choose to collect all the destination versions corresponding to those items if it's easier to batch the call on your store. Or otherwise, you can just defer and let that be done later. We'll call you back when we need them. You construct an item called a change applier. And that object knows how to consider versions and knowledge and figure out which changes are in conflict and which aren't. And then calls eventually result in either a save item change call, or if you're doing your own conflict resolution, there are corresponding methods that will be called to ask you to figure out how you'd like to resolve your conflict. In this method, the engine is based on what's going on, already figured out what you need to do for a particular item. So in the case of SQL items, for example, what you could do is represent all those different rows that you want to travel together as the same item. And we support a notion called change units as well. So you can create a version, you can group a set of properties on an object conceptually into a change unit, and then we'll conflict resolve and conflict detect at the level of the change units of that item rather than at the item level. Though the item still remains the unit of persistence insofar, or not persistence, but liveness. So deletes are always happen at the object level. You can't have some change units of an object present and some not. Sorry? Oh, I hear so, and it's from the other people over there. We're going to tell you what to do, and you just need to find the corresponding item in your store. This shows using the metadata store to do it, but you could do it in any other way. Manipulate that item, update the metadata, so the versions associated with, and then save the change down to your store. In the case of delete, obviously, you're going to have to delete. And then the other thing you, of course, need to do is save the knowledge for your scope. This is showing using the metadata store, but it's easy any other way as well. Knowledge is serializable. It also supports XML serialization if that interests you. And you can just stick it somewhere, binary or XML or whatever you like. In the samples, we tend to write it out to a single file, but by no means do you have to do that. For example, if you're using SQL, you may just want to put it in a blob or an image column or something like that. This is about the built-in providers. I talked about this already in the talk today. We have a file sync provider, an ADO.NET provider, and they make it easy to do things. I'll have a look at those. If your solution involves that type of stuff, then it's a good place to start at least. The FSP supports syncing between files and folders that are accessible by Win32. We have some cool support for removable media, so it'll handle various things as long as you can find the sync metadata. Drive letter changes don't especially matter to this, for example. We can also do some filtering scenarios, like I only want to synchronize Word documents or something like that. And then we have syncserviceradio.net. We have two versions of this. One that's very specific to master-slave scenarios, client-server. The advantage of that is that you don't have to store metadata on the server. The disadvantage of that is it doesn't extend to peer-to-peer, so it's a very specialized solution. We also have this notion now that'll ship with SQL Server 2008, but it's also in the CDP of sync services for radio.net that supports peer-to-peer synchronization of database data, relational data. And the nice thing about working with this stuff is if you're familiar with data.net, it works in very similar terms. You see things like data sets and whatnot exposed in the API. I talked about this already today. SSE was the original name of FeedSync. Sorry?
There is an MSLI FeedSync service.
Yeah, so it's very straightforward to connect to that. It's interesting. You could provide a provider to sync with that, but then you run into a question of what your object looks like. So we'd have to hand you an object, and we'd still need you to do the object conversion to and from XML because it's an arbitrary thing, so we'd have to handle you an XML node, and we could do that, but really the amount of extra code for you to just use write a provider that's very small and then uses the FeedSync stuff built into the framework. I showed the producer consumer API in there already, but underneath that actually lives another set of stuff related to FeedSync. And that makes it really easy to write a provider that speaks FeedSync natively. So if you're interested in FeedSync, have a look at the reference docs. There's some more stuff. Oh, okay. So but have a look at the reference docs for the framework, and you'll see that there's some component. I don't know if you, did you use a framework? No. Yes?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you have a look at the framework, there's the producer-consumer stuff I was talking about, but there's also sort of lower-level stuff for writing a provider that is more intrinsically FeedSync. So why don't I talk a bit about knowledge? I sort of gave you the high-level view of how these things put together, but let me just go with a little example here. This involves some crazy animation, so I'll see if I can remember the flow. I should fix the resolution. It's cut off here. Ah, that's good. Much better. Okay. So, in this example, we have two machines, and they have some data. Right now, they're not in sync. They have four items, I, J, K, and L, but they have different versions of them. Apparently, there's some other endpoints involved that I don't have illustrated here. They're not syncing right now. We know from looking at the versions, there happens to be an endpoint C and an endpoint D who are also making changes to this data. But right now, in this example, I'm just going to sync A with B. The other thing you can see is their knowledge. This is a simplified form of what knowledge might look like, but you can see this guy knows versions from A up to 4, from B up to 3, from C up to 6, and D up to 0. So C6 and D0 are kind of interesting, because what we see is they've seen changes from those guys, but they don't have any versions associated with this. So that may mean that they got a change from those guys and then later overwrote it with some local change, or it may mean that someone else did that and then told them about it. On the other side, again, we see the knowledge associated with this guy. Again, you'll notice his A watermark is a little bit higher than the versions he has locally. Presumably, he may have overwritten another version, perhaps on I or something. So what we're going to do is we're going to have A request changes from B. So like we talked about, A is going to take its knowledge and send it over to B. And then what's going to happen is B is going to compare its versions. So we saw it compared the version of C, compared the version on D, and it's trying to figure out, so for example, that change D2, is it, that version isn't known to A. So we're going to have to put that change in our batch. And we also need to send over what we call Maybook knowledge, which is that knowledge we can use for conflict detection. And we're going to compare that. And we're going to say, B3, B6. So we're good, because he knew about B3. Right, B3 was known to the other side, so there's no conflict. So we can just apply that change. And we can keep track that for item J, we can't raise our watermark for everything yet, but we can say for item J, we know this extra stuff. Our version, our knowledge for J is higher than our knowledge for everything else. And then we can keep going with our operation. We compare B5, so that's not known either. So we'll send that over, and we look and we see C4, C5. And that's a problem, right? Because this guy made a change without knowledge of another change. So we need to say for that B5, we'll put it down here in our conflict log. We'll deal with it later. Conceptually, think of this as not a log on the disk, it's just an example. We would actually could resolve it in line, or we could log it for later use. It's all supported in the framework. And we'll say once we apply that conflict, we'll learn these new things for K. And now we're done. We've gotten all the changes, and we've learned A3, B6, C4, D2. But we need to deal with our conflict. So how do we resolve the conflict? What am I doing here? I got to look at this flow for a second. I can't see a step ahead of you, so. Let's see, for J, A3. Okay, so for J, we had that additional knowledge, and that's fine. So we can say that for J, we knew that stuff's covered, right? So we can go ahead and get rid of that thing for J. but we can say that we don't know that new watermark for K because it had that conflict. So we're just inverting things. This is just a step in the flow. And now we can go and deal with this conflict. So we say, okay, we have V5 and C5. Well, the important thing to take into account with the conflict resolution is A is deciding to resolve how to resolve this conflict. And then he wants to resolve it right now. So conflict resolution is a local change. So A is going to assign a local version from machine A to the result of its conflict resolution. So in our case, we're going to assign it version A5. So K gets version A5 because we've resolved the conflict. How we resolve it is immaterial. We could have resolved it in favor of one endpoint or the other endpoint. We still need to assign a new local version because otherwise that resolution won't propagate correctly. Other people will keep detecting the same conflict. And then once we've done that, we can go ahead and say, we can take that out of our conflict log and we can move that knowledge up and add it on. And now we can raise our whole watermark. So now the two endpoints are in sync. We've taken changes from B and moved them to A. So that's sort of a simple knowledge flow. Now there's some things this leaves out, right? First is, I illustrated everything using single item exceptions. In reality, if sync providers enumerate changes in groups or in ordered groups, we call those a range, then we can represent things as ranges of the knowledge. So I can say, for items, say, M through W, we have this knowledge, and it's maybe higher or lower than the scope-wide knowledge. Also, exceptions for items, as you saw, come in two types. They can be negative, saying I know less for this item, or positive, I know more. But in general, the engine handles the manipulation of this knowledge. So that sort of gives you a little bit more concrete understanding of how things are working inside the applier and things like that. Did you guys have any questions? Or so it's a subset, though?
Yeah.
So in fact, if you just tell the, if you just mark your provider as being a filtering provider and let the sync engine know that you're it's a filtered session, it will manipulate the knowledge correctly so that it knows to not raise the scope level knowledge because it may not have everything in that particular scope. So filtering is handled is more the point, and right now it's using knowledge to do that.
How would you efficiently build that for my rather than sort of doing initial sync to sort of transfer the data? That can be pretty costly. You might have hundreds of thousands of rows of data. How would you sort of make a copy of that? Like for today, what we do is we actually do a data, you know, using a data transfer.
Yeah, I mean, you could actually do kind of interesting things. One thing you could, for example, do is take all of that data, stored in some form, and since you may have more than one of those endpoints, what you're going to want to do is, when that data gets to the other endpoint, you're going to want to, even though you may have assumed it was, say, replica A when you generated that file, assign it a new replica ID. A will never make changes again, but then everything will work correctly if you can sort of think about how it would work with the knowledge. So let's say you invent replica Z and assign it a new tick count, and then just keep going from there. Everything will work. Because it just basically looks like Z has never made changes initially, and it synced all of its data over from someone else. Are you talking about multiple endpoints syncing to a particular data store at once, or
whatever? What are your scale visions? How do you scale?
Yeah, I mean, so in terms of particular sync, sync is in managed code, sync is synchronous with a particular endpoint. So we wait for it to apply the changes and finish applying the changes and return back. In native, there's actually support for async providers as well. So if you want to write a provider that you know, we tell you to start applying this and you call us back when you finished applying it, we can handle that as well. We chose not to expose that in managed code right now. We may in future. It's just a question of whether people are interested in doing that or not. Right now we've seen that even a synchronous model, because sync operations are fairly short-lived, scales up fairly well. because there's no in-memory stuff you have to persist after the sync operation happens, right? So if it's a managed server, you can imagine you can throw up an app domain, do your sync inside that app domain, and tear it down when you're done, or things like that. In terms of syncing multiple endpoints at once, it's actually not too hard. The main thing you just have to manage is you're going to need some sort of transactioning on your store, right? And once you can do things inside a transaction, you're pretty good. On the destination side, you the main concern is you're going to be updating that knowledge simultaneously with other people, so that can become a hot spot, and there's some ways to handle that. We can talk about that later if you're interested. Or it's kind of, you're getting into the point where you're trying to scale really, really big, and you can do things like shred the knowledge out into multiple rows and things like that. I'll finish in like... Okay. Oh, okay. I'll finish in 1 minute here. The other thing is when you're enumerating changes from the source, you're going to want to make sure you enumerate changes inside some sort of a snapshot transaction, or you do some sort of optimistic concurrency checks, because you have to worry about people making changes underneath you, especially ads. It's the usual problem, right? If you're not willing to lock the whole table, you have to worry about rows showing up. Okay. Sorry, I know I'll go a long time.
No problem.